Scripture this morning comes from Luke chapter 16, verses 19 through 31. There was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And being in torment in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. Then he said, I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they come to this place of torment. Abraham said to him, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. And he said, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. But he said to him, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rise from the dead.
I suppose of all the questions that perplex us from time to time and occupy our minds, few, if any, equal the question of what happens after we die. And these words of Jesus we've just read together concerning a beggar named Lazarus and an unnamed rich man peel back the curtain just a bit and give us a glimpse of something we otherwise wouldn't see quite as clearly. And that is what does lie beyond the grave. What lies beyond this life? Some time ago, I was at a family dinner with Benita's father and some others in her family. At the table there, it was a Saturday, and I was asking Wayne, her father, who preaches, asking him what I ask so often when I'm with him before Sunday. I say, what are you preaching on tomorrow? And he said, I am preaching on what will we leave behind. And sitting across the table from him was one of his great-grandchildren who hadn't been paying a lot of attention to anything we were saying, but she heard him say those words, what will we leave behind? The great-grandchild just blurted out, everything, we're leaving everything behind. And I thought for a moment, well, there is a bright child. There's the right answer. There's a good answer. There's the only answer. And then I thought in my mind a little more about it and realized, well, no, that's not the answer. That's part of the answer, but it's not the answer. This is one of those questions. It depends upon what you mean by the word what. If you're talking about things material, you're leaving all of that behind. And so the child was right. Everything is left behind. But if you think of what makes you, you, your self, your consciousness, your personality, again, that which makes you really and truly you, you take all of that with you when you leave. And of course, there's that sense beyond even those two understandings, and that is the legacy you leave behind in terms of your memory and your influence. And so depending upon the way you look at the question, you come up with different answers. And I thought for just a few moments this morning we might look at these three answers, all correct, to the same question. What will we leave behind? And first we'll take the view of the child who said everything. And there's truth to that. In the story before us, Lazarus had the crumbs he was eating from. He had the dogs licking his sores. He had the sores themselves, all of which he left behind him when he left this life. The rich man had his purple and fine linen, all of the food he fared sumptuously in eating. He left all of that behind. And when it comes to those things we own, we have, we possess, we earn, we sometimes attach ourselves to, and sadly sometimes even hoard, all of those things we'll leave behind us. Jesus said, you remember the words from Matthew chapter 6 at 19, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon the earth, where moth and rust corrupt, where thieves break through and steal, but rather lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not corrupt, where thieves do not break through and steal, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. These treasures upon the earth, as interesting and sometimes even as important as they are and seem to be right now, we all have to have food to eat. We all need a place to stay at night. It's nice to have something to drive around. All of these things we have now, we can't take with us when we leave this life. It's just impossible. When we leave this life, we go into a different realm, a realm which is not physical. And so your car doesn't matter if you could take it. Your home wouldn't matter if you could take it. Your bank account wouldn't mean anything if you could take it with you. And so all of these things of a material nature will be left behind in the material world. And so in that sense, we'll leave it all behind. But then so much of what is taught here in the story before us concerns what we actually do not leave behind. And now there's always the question, is this a parable before us or an actual account? And at times I've gone one way and then the other, and I've come to realize it really doesn't matter because the same truth is taught regardless. But I do know this, what this passage teaches clearly is that there is life beyond this life. There is existence beyond the grave. That after we close our eyes for the last time and breathe our last breath, that's not the end of our being, the end of our existence, just the opposite. Lazarus is shown here as to have been winged away by angels at his death. And of course, it wasn't his body that was taken away, it was his spirit. And whereas the body of the rich man was buried, he didn't take the body with him. That was one thing left behind, but he was still very much alive and awake and aware. He had his consciousness. He had his memory. He had what made him him that was still with him and as him and a part of him when this life was over. And if you doubt that, just look at the things that the rich man said on the other side of this valley of the shadow. He still was the same man he was. In life, he was a man superior to Lazarus by the way he lived and by the way he completely ignored the plight of Lazarus. And so here he has a problem with his flames and the torment, and he would like just a drop of water on his tongue to soothe his torment. And so Abraham sent Lazarus over here. He still is the same person he was. And he still has his memory. He remembers his brothers he left back in this life. He's not with them right now. His body's been buried. They're still living. His spirit is in the realm beyond. Their spirits are still within their bodies. But he remembers his brothers. And so we understand from this that we leave this life not in some unconscious, soul-sleeping state, as it were, but we are very much aware. We're very much alive in the sense of being conscious and having our own consciousness still in the picture. If this story doesn't teach that, I wonder what it does teach. Both men are very much aware and alive after death. And so what do we leave behind? Well, not anything that matters. We leave behind our furniture, our house, our car, our bank accounts, our stuff, and oh, how much stuff we have. All of us left behind. And that's why at best we do the best we can to clean up before ourselves before we leave, and still those left behind have to have a sale and have some decisions as to who takes what and who does what with this and what do we throw away and what do we keep, because the stuff we leave behind, but we're still in existence. We still live. As the song we sing so often suggests, the soul never dies. The psalmist puts it in interesting language in Psalm 90 when he describes our mortality and our expiration date, if you will, with the eternal nature of God. In the first part of the psalm, everlasting to everlasting, you art God. And because of that he'll say in just a moment, he begins the psalm by saying, O Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were formed, or ever thou hast formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. Just a few verses later, though, in verse 10, the days of our years. Now, the old King James says 70 years and 10. It's been cleaned up in the New King James and others by giving us the actual digits, 70. And of a reason of strength, there be 80, yet is her strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off. What's the it there? It is soon cut off, and we fly away. Brother Albert Brumley took those words and wrote a well-known song from it. I'll fly away. It is soon cut off and we fly away. And then just a couple of verses later, he says, so teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts into wisdom. Number our days into realizing that we have a certain number of them. God doesn't. He's eternal. We have a certain number to our days in the flesh. But even when that happens, our days in flesh are numbered. We don't know right now how large that number is. We just don't. But when the end comes, there'll be a number attached. How many times I've read the obituary of various ones over the years, and it mentions their birth date, and then their date of departure from this life, and then sometimes the math is done in the obituary. They lived this many years, and this many months, and this many days. There's a numbering to our days in the flesh. But the spirit, it is cut off, and we fly away. Now, language similar to that is used in the last chapter of Ecclesiastes, where Solomon has, at the beginning of that chapter, mentioned in some graphic detail the aging process, where the keepers of the house tremble and and where the grinders cease because there are few, when strength fails, fear is in the way. And at the end of this litany, this list of things that go wrong with the body as aging progresses and we get closer to the end, he then talks about the time when the silver cord is cut and men go about the streets as mourners. And then he says, and the body returns to dust and the spirit to God who gave it. And you see that in the story Jesus tells in Luke 16. The body goes back to dust. Lazarus doesn't talk about his burial, but his body stays behind. The rich man, he's buried, but as it turns out, enough years go by and the same thing happens to both. The body goes back to the earth. The spirit, though, as the story shows, to God who gave it. And so what will you take? What will you leave? You'll leave things material. You'll take the whole of who you really are spiritually. You'll have your memories, you'll have your intellect, you'll have your understanding, you'll have your consciousness, you'll have your sense of surroundings. And someone asked, well, will we know other people? Well, the rich man knew Lazarus. And from other parts of the Bible that speak of such things, as in being gathered to our fathers, it seems that that is the case. But to what degree and how that works is way past my pay grade as a preacher this morning. But we'll take with us a great deal, more than we leave behind, really. Within that last is, to me, the most interesting of the ways to view and frame the question, what will we leave behind? And that is in terms of the imprint we make upon those who've known us, the memory we leave behind in their hearts, the influence we leave behind in this world. And we do leave a legacy behind us, be it good or bad. We leave either a good name or a bad name. Jezebel left a terrible name, so much that nobody names their little girl Jezebel these days. David left a good name. He was a man after God's own heart. And we name our boys David these days, all these years later. You leave behind a certain name. And you leave behind a certain memory. The wise man Solomon says in Proverbs, the memory of the just is blessed, but the memory of the wicked will rot. We have fond memories of those who've left this world that have left us with the kindness they've shown, the goodness they've revealed in their own lives, the best of the people they were. Those good memories, we leave those behind, at least for a time, at least with those we've known for a generation or perhaps two. As a rock will ripple in the water, so our memories will ripple a bit after we're gone, and especially with respect to our influence. There are people to this day who are Christians only because somebody years and years and years and years ago converted somebody. They converted somebody else. They converted many somebodies that led to our conversion. Influence is a mighty, mighty thing. And so I thought as we close this morning, I'd remind you of Shirley Wheeler's favorite song. It's number 685. And not to mix the portions of worship, I'll just read it. I'm tempted to lead it, but let's just go ahead and read it together. 685. As I say, Shirley loved this song. She'd always ask for it first of all when she had a chance to choose a song to be led. And by the way, she and so many others whose places are vacant because they've left this life have like Shirley, left a good legacy behind them. We have good memories of them and their influence lives on. But anyway, the song says, after I leave for worlds unknown over the borderline, never again on earth to roam, what will I leave behind? Will I be missed by those I love, or have I been unkind? Have I been true to God above? What will I leave behind? This is my prayer, O Lord, today. Let me be wholly thine. When I am called from earth away, let heaven then be mine. Leave behind, yes, leave behind. What will I leave behind? After I leave for worlds unknown, what will I leave behind? And so the question, what will I leave behind? Well, if it's material, everything. If it's me and my spirit and my very self, my personality, my memory, my consciousness, everything I'm taking with me. If it means my influence, it depends. My name, it depends on the life I've lived, the choices I've made. I hope all of us one day can, as we leave this life, leave behind a rich legacy of Christ-likeness, of goodness, of purity. I hope all of us can leave behind a good influence that others might follow our example and be better because of it. If you're here this morning and outside of Christ or in need of salvation, please obey the gospel even before this service comes to a close. Or if you've walked away and need to come back to Christ once again, do so now and come as together we stand and sing.